This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, BFM 89.9, Wednesday, 23rd January 2018. You're with The Morning Run. I'm Julian Ng, together with Joyce Goh and Sharad Zabdullah. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning, Julian.
How are you guys this morning?
Okay, yeah.
Not too bad, not too bad.
Pretty good.
So we're drawing closer to the first festival of the year, Chinese New Year.
Yeah. Like,
have you guys made plans for it?
Yeah, in the midst of planning for like the meals and also relatives are visiting. So, you know, it's kind of like what to do when they're in town.
Oh, okay, yeah. Nice.
And
You're having a party?
Well, I wish. I'm looking forward to catch up with some of my Chinese friends that I've not met.
Oh, that's great. You still go visiting, is it? Open houses.
Well, if they are, yeah, if they're around and they would invite me over. But most of the time, yeah,
fantastic.
They do. Yeah.
Fantastic. I never, you know, not
never
that
invite.
Will you be having an open house, Julian, so that we can visit you?
You know, this open house concept is very interesting. I think we should talk about it because open house is supposed to be what it is, right? You're not supposed to need an invitation because it's an open house.
Ah, you're right.
So you're supposed to be able to just go up to the house and get inside.
That's true. Maybe and let me rephrase that. It's not really an invitation, but whether or not they're going to be around.
Yeah. No,
yeah,
but
that's true.
But I think it's worth discussing maybe sometime in the future whether we have forgotten the idea of what an open house is.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm taking notes right now.
So my neighbor, when I first moved into Taman Tun, you know, he invited me over for Hari Raya, both Hari Raya Puasa and Haji. And I went over. I went over and I was quite, you know, it was nice doing that again after such a long time because I've not attended an open house for such a long time, even for Chinese New Year.
Mm. Yeah. What will you be doing for Chinese New Year, Julian?
Oh, I'll be like, you know, having the usual eating fest and having the post-eating comatose.
Yeah.
The usual, you know.
Yeah, but you still look the same, Julian.
Oh, you never know. You never know. So, what are we talking about this morning?
Well, love my palm oil. Do you guys know what that's about?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna love it.
You either love it or you hate it.
Well, MAHV does Malaysia Airports Holdings and Malaysia Airlines, as well as AirAsia Group and Malindo Airways. They're all getting on this Love My Palm Oil campaign. So we're going to be talking about that later on.
Okay,
great. Well, 6 hours away from lunch. I don't know what your plans are, but I don't know what my plans are going to be. But yeah, it's in Singapore. I think there's an article from Rice. They're speaking about this office lunch culture and, you know, whether to love it or not. So yeah, we'll be talking about that later on.
That's just Malaysia's favorite topic. Okay, so I look forward to that. And coming up next is also the question of whether the changing nature of the MC is a good thing, right? The medical certificate, whether that's a good thing. And we'd also love to hear from you. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or also tweet us at BFM Radio if you have anything to say to us, and we'd love to hear from you. So stay tuned. We'll be back with more BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that's Star Treatment by Arctic Monkeys. Chirpy, energetic song to wake you up in the morning.
Yeah.
Trippy as well.
You're with The Morning Run. I'm Julian Ng, together with Joyce Goh and Sharad Abdullah. And we're going to talk about the sixth day. Now, because of technology, our working day is morphing into a kind of 24/7 cycle. An article from the New York Times entitled "The Death of the Sick Day" points out that this is having profound change on what we call the sick day or sick leave here in Malaysia. We no longer have to call in sick. Now we just say we're working from home. Now I'm not sure if I like this development.
Yeah, well, this is interesting. I mean, clearly how technology has changed the way we worked. But at the same time, is that introduction of a sick day in the first place. I wonder, you know, that was something that was when we started formalizing work, as in when we started introducing a job that starts from 9 to 5, and, you know, everyone is less flexible. Everybody is expected to, you know, to perform during a certain hour. So hence the reason to introduce sick day in the first place way back
well,
in the beginning.
Yeah, I agree with you, Sharitz. With regards to technologies, because of technology, it has made working for all of us who work a lot more accessible. So we have access to work from wherever we are. And whether or not we're sick or we're healthy or we're on holiday, you know, it's there. And sometimes this article says that, you know, sometimes, you know, it brings about the question of when you're sick, you know, should you be working? And my husband was actually, over the weekend, he fell ill and he caught a fever, sore throat, you know, the works.
Yeah.
And he went to see the doctor yesterday morning and he got an MC and he stayed in, but actually he was checking on his emails and he actually had a deadline. So he's working on something, not super full on, but he was still doing checking his work in a way and still working on some things, doing some research in a way. His boss is very understanding. His boss says, please rest and then we'll check in. We'll just see you tomorrow when you get better.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes it's just us, right? Because you have a deadline or you have something that you got to do and it's just bugging you. And maybe it's because of tech. That's what has happened.
Yeah.
But is that a good thing? Because if you're sick, you should be resting.
No, yeah,
right?
You should be resting.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
And I guess it's an indication to other areas of your lives as well. You need a cut off times, right? If you've been at work the whole day, is it a good idea to just mix your private life and your working life?
Well, when you say private life, you know, I don't know if you guys experienced this, yeah, but when there are times when you're just not feeling that great, only in the mornings. I don't know if it's the hormones, when cortisol is just kicking in and the temperature is down, and your temperature rises, you just don't feel 100% to work. But then come the afternoon, you suddenly feel okay and you're ready to just, you know, flick your email and just...
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. I mean, that's just trying to crank up the engine to a point where you're ready to work. But in today's work culture, it's a practice for your employer to demand your private time in the form of answering emails or WhatsApp messages and so on. And this article just indicates that line is blurring, you know, between your work life and your private life. And I think that's unhealthy. Not only unhealthy for your own personal health, but I think that's unhealthy for even the company's productivity levels.
Yeah, that's true. It's unhealthy, but it's just very real. And it's so common in these days, you know, it's for us as well. Even when you're not sick, over the weekend, you'll still get work emails, you still get WhatsApp, you'll still be doing research for the following day or for the following interview that you'll be having the next week. You know, so it's because of technology and because of the pace of work that we are in today, everything has changed. And even the sick day, I believe, if the doctor gives you an MC, you should be resting at home as well. Some people show up to work and then they spread the germs, which is not good.
Yeah, that's not on.
Well, yeah, that's an example of just blurring the lines, right? Sharing bodily fluids and bacteria and all that. But I think that the work culture is also changing because now a lot of the new organizations, like the more you know, trendy tech companies, allow their employees to work at home. So there is that quid pro quo in the unsaid employment contract where you can merge your life with your work because it helps you and because you get more satisfaction out of that. It works very well for like certain people if they have to take care of their kids at home or their, you know, sick parents at home. It's not necessarily totally a bad thing, but I think sometimes clear lines have to be drawn. Okay, it's 7:15 and up next we'll talk about the Singapore lunch culture, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Hold On Tight by Electric Light Orchestra. You're with The Morning Run, Julian, Joyce and Sharitz. Now, we're looking at an article from Rise, which is a website that focuses on commentary from an Asian perspective. And this article is entitled, "The Inescapable Singaporean Office Lunch Culture is the Worst Part of the Work." A very long title there. And I quote from the author, "Singaporean office lunch culture appears to be ridden with a sort of peer pressure that turns supposedly rational adults into teenagers," unquote. And this is because the lunch clique, right, pressures you into going for lunch with them. And I think many times people are just forced into this situation when they actually don't want to have lunch with their colleagues. And I think this raises the wider question of, you know, the extrovert versus the introvert. And, you know, should we rethink our lunch hour?
Well, yeah, rethink our lunch habit as well. There's that pressure that I think a lot of us feel of being outcast or not being a team player. I think a lot of us feel that way when you don't join your colleagues going out for lunch. Now, I think this is an opportunity of some of those, some of us, an opportunity for us to socialize with colleagues and getting to know what's going on, or even catch up with work, as in whatever communication that needs to take place. Because I think during
work again, lines again.
I guess it really depends on the nature of your work. Yeah.
Well, if this feels a bit like we're back in school, doesn't it? It's all this social peer pressure and whether or not to go to lunch. Sometimes they go to lunch and they don't invite you. So it really depends. And coming back to this article on this office lunch culture, the writer saying that's the worst part of work, but it's also the part where they have these different groups and they go out and have lunches and they exchange, be it personal stories or work stories. And sometimes it also happens with the smoking group, isn't it? They go down for a smoke break or they go out for a smoke break and there they exchange information that's going on. So again, it's this whole...
I don't think that happens too often in Singapore because the ban on smoking has, unlike here, you know, has happened for a long, long time
in Singapore.
Yeah, that's
true. But I'm just saying that the lunch group, because you're saying the lunch clique or whatever, there's also this whole smoking group culture.
But there are social repercussions because, according to this article, I guess the author is very pressured into going for lunch with their colleagues. And if you don't, you know, there are social repercussions, even political repercussions from an office viewpoint, because they end up, you know, not friending you. And it might kind of damage your career prospects.
Yeah, so it's just a matter of prioritizing, really. There's a lot of variables that would make someone consider whether or not to go for lunch. For an example, I mean, we're talking about economics as well, whether or not you could afford to have lunch outside all the time. Some are very comfortable, some are, cost conscious and wanting to, you know, one way is to pack lunch from home and take it to the office. And if you've got a nice view, you're sitting on the 16th floor or 17th floor
But how do you get around like this kind of pressure, right? If it exists in the workplace,
I just don't go for it. I mean, I don't have the time. I have to do a school run.
So and you're willing to give up some of your promotional prospects because of that?
I think,
I hope it doesn't get to that extent, really.
Well, after becoming a mom, I think kids first. But there are the promotional prospects. You mean you go to lunch? It's not just lunch. There are other things as well that, for me, I've taken a conscious effort. It might dampen my prospects for my career, but for me, it's the kids first.
Yeah. And also, is the nature of your job. I mean, if a lot of the times the job... The nature of your job allows you to be more of an introvert person. A lot of research. You require a lot of mental energy. And sometimes some people would just like to opt out lunch for sleeping and just refresh that brain that you've been squeezing, you know, most time of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us what you think. And I think this extends into the greater work life practices as well. Whether you would do certain things and give up your promotional prospects, not only the lunch hour. We're coming up to the 6:30 news. And in the meantime, here's Cradle of Love by Billy Idol, BFM 89.9. With Gimme All Your Lookin', you're with The Morning Run. Thanks for staying with us, Julian, Joyce and Sharitz Abdullah. Thanks also for all your messages on social media. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, the palm oil sector, guys, one of Malaysia's biggest export earners, is under siege because CPO prices haven't seen the best of times, and the Europeans are also attacking it, saying it's environmentally damaging. So the government has come up with this Love My Palm Oil campaign. They're saying that it's patriotic to love palm oils. Some of our biggest local corporations have jumped on the bandwagon. We're talking about Malaysian Airports, Malaysia Airlines, AirAsia, and Malindo. These are all from the airline sector, it so happened.
Right.
So is this a good policy to have, guys?
Well, maybe. Because airlines, they cater a lot of international tourists that comes over, and what a better way to sort of extend your propaganda on palm oil to to the international
goose with the golden eggs.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's more of how effective is this Love My Palm Oil campaign, you know. At the end of the day, it's all about execution as well. I mean, there are many, many campaigns that Malaysia has had, but how many of them do we actually remember? For me, I think one big campaign that stuck to me was things like Chuti Chuti Malaysia or Malaysia Truly Asia. But Love My Palm Oil, I don't know, still early days, I guess. Whether or not having all these big guns behind it will help.
I haven't processed this fully, right? I haven't gone past this slogan, Love My Palm Oil, right? Because I'm just asking the question of whether this is good policy, whether the product should sell on its own, or that you should beef up sentiment that supports palm oil just to support sales, you know,
right.
Just to beef up sales. I don't know if that is good policy, and I don't know if governments around the world should be involved in a sales pitch for their product, local products.
Yeah, so that's a good question, whether or not government should be the one involved with promoting on the ground whether or not the use of palm oil is great. Now, what we're looking at in this article are corporations. Now, I mean, based on historical facts, I mean, government hasn't been doing so well, especially on the advertising front, as in how they advertise and how they promote any particular issues, for example, tourism. So, but we could, you know, the question is whether or not we could rely on corporations to do it. I mean, they've done quite well. I mean, AirAsia probably comes out with pretty decent taglines once in a while, and whether or not they could
It seems like arm twisting. I mean, you're going up to corporations and they feel guilt tripped and pressured into doing such a thing. I know they did not say that they have been pressured into doing this, but it seems so. And if government policy can influence corporations, then there's something to be said about the independence of corporations and their competitiveness, right?
Right.
Let alone trying to shore up support of a feeling of love. You know, love should be natural. It should come naturally. You know, the government shouldn't say, like, you should love this or that.
Well, yeah, but what's in it for the corporations, though? I mean, let's face a fact. I mean, the palm oil product is everywhere. I mean, if they're going to get involved in every single palm oil sort of related products, I mean, you could probably, you know, probably see their brand being published almost everywhere. Could be good for them, really.
I think for what they're going to do, perhaps, is also to increase education to kind of educate people more about what palm oil is about.
That's good policy, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going that path, you know, that's good policy, because you're just revealing more information. Mm-hmm. Because you're trying to put in the other side of the argument about whether palm oil really is environmentally damaging or more environmentally damaging than, say, soybeans or corn or other crops around the world, right? Mm. Why has the European or the rest of the world singled out palm oil as, you know, being an environmental concern? I think that's good policy, but really to get into your emotional sentiment and asking you to love something, I don't know about that. Tell us what you think. Are you supportive of this Love My Palm Oil campaign? Tweet us or WhatsApp us. We'll be coming back with more interesting discussion. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Cat Power with Lift in Bars. A nice little tune there. Thanks for staying with us on the morning run during this 6 a.m. hour. I'm Julian, and together with Joyce and Sherritz, And we have been discussing a bunch of things. We've been talking about, actually, we started off by talking about the open house. And we have actually a comment by Mr. Tan, who says that the open house concept is kind of passé because it's not easy standing by a couple of days just to wait for anyone to show up. Of course, makes sense. Palm oil by Victor Liu, you know, a loyal listener. White man versus Asian, of course, right? That's the whole debate that's going on. They have spent decades and decades destroying their own forests. Is it our turn? And that's the argument, right? Should we take responsibility over our own forests because we are at a critical stage of our environmental development? What other things do we have, guys?
Well, we have a WhatsApp from our listener, Arusawan, who also spoke about palm oil. Now, he said that love your palm oil, well, get Chef One to be the ambassador.
Not a bad idea.
Not a bad idea indeed.
Yep. So the other things that we were discussing, you know, work pressure. The MC is kind of changing to working from home. So a lot of pressure there. And also, you know, an article by Rice in Singapore. People are pressured into going to lunch with their lunch cliques because if you don't, there might be promotional consequences as well, right? So a lot of pressure-related talk this morning.
Speaking about Singapore, I caught up with a schoolmate who settled down in Singapore. She's Penangite. Mm-hmm. Actually, they're both. She and her husband are Penangites. And they settled down in Singapore and we had dinner recently. And, you know, school just started. We're like 2 weeks into the new school year. And her daughter and my eldest are about the same age. So they just started Standard 1 recently. And they were sharing with us as to how 2 weeks in, her daughter already had 2 spelling tests.
What?
2?
Are you serious?
Yeah. And we were like, oh.
That's so pressurizing.
What kind of spelling test did they have? She said, oh, the first week was on numbers.
Okay.
And the second one was on like sheep, like animals. So she asked us, is it the same for you guys? about your elder, and then mentioned my eldest name. And then we were like, no. But yeah, you know.
How old are these kids again?
This year they'll be turning 7.
Okay.
So Standard 1. Just started Standard 1. But it shows the difference in pace and just different. I mean, I guess no right, no wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, it just shows the differences in pace as well as the differences in just education system or just the expectation.
I've seen those spelling bee competitions, okay. Right? And it's no walk in the park. I mean, it's the kids are under so much pressure.
Oh, yeah, well... Well, but I really don't know how to feel about this. I mean, I've always had this perception over kids needing to play, and now I feel pressured with my Singaporean counterpart.
So you feel pressured as a parent.
As a parent, now I feel pressured.
You should watch when they ask us, my husband and I know each other, we're like, no. But
I have a question, Joyce. I mean, okay, for an example, hypothetically, if we do introduce assessment before primary school age in Malaysia, yeah?
There are entrance exams.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. Some schools do introduce assessment,
mm-hmm,
is it?
Yeah.
But how would you feel if your son does not feel, does not do very well in that assessment? Would you feel upset? Would you be upset?
I would. Of course, I'll try to understand why. And then also for me to also talk to him and explain and also try to understand why he didn't do well. But
right.
Yeah, what about yourself?
I don't know. I still have that mentality of the kids should continue playing.
Yeah,
yeah. So that's some pressure taken vicariously. Okay, we're coming up to the 7 a.m. news. And after that, we'll talk about Orang Asli land rights. And to take you there, this is How's It Going To Be by Third Eye Blind, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.